right or wrong. You know, there's alternatives. There's not all. There's a right and a wrong, a yes or a no, an on and an off, or is or isn't or something. There's always an alternative to say, oh, let me sleep on it. Remember that used to be the old saying, let me sleep on it. Now people are impulsive. I want that car. The guy can sell you a car, a washer, anything because you want it right now. Instantaneous. People should sleep on these decisions. Think about what they're doing. But I think getting the young people, the newborns, on the land claims, if that's what they're going to go with. You know, it's your people's decision. But that's my two cents. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Les. The only thing I disagree with Mr. Lesk about is when he said there weren't any young people here. Just because that eight-day-old baby left doesn't mean that everybody left is an old-timer. A couple of things have come up that you might think about. I'm not suggesting you should... necessarily have the answer, but Mr. Johnson said that, the people in Siri understand the value of their stock in 1991, I think the implication was, well, they'll hang on to it. Claire Swan made the point that if in 1991 your stock is valuable, then that's when people will be coming around offering you money for it. And maybe if they come at a time when you really need the money, you might sell, even if, as a general principle, you think Native people shouldn't sell their stock, because, as Mr. Lusk said, it's their birthright. Then you might think about this, too. One of the proposals that has been made is that, if you want to sell your stock, then your own corporation, maybe it's Siri, maybe it's your own village corporation, should have the right to buy that stock from you so it won't go to an outsider. Well, that means that the corporation has to have the money to buy the stock. And if it doesn't have the money to buy the stock, then are you stuck with it? Is it just the way it is now, that is, you can't sell it? Or does it mean that any buyback provision necessarily gives you the right to sell your stock if your corporation won't buy it back at a fair price? Well, those are questions that I think we all should be thinking about. Mr. Johnson,
the regions right now are
we take the mic to you. You know, don't bother to get up.
Regions right now are trying to get legislation passed where they can sell non-voting stock and buy voting stock. Now, this is a very insidious thing as far as it's concerned, because what it's doing, you wouldn't think the region would be trying to shaft you in any way, shape, or form, but it puts control in a smaller and smaller group of people's hands. That's what they're trying to do, and they can take and buy your voting stock and buy it for cents on the dollar instead of dollar for dollar. And I didn't mention the subsurface rights in Cook Inlet region, for example, are worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 billion, somewhere in that area. See, these are types of things, and as long as they won't put these, I think at even the accounting firms who are making the annual reports and signing their name to a piece of paper saying these are the assets of a corporation, protect themselves from a suit, better be putting on that these are the figures that are reported to us. We don't know if they're true or not. Should give you a little warning as to what's taking place, because
they do put that on, don't they?
And I think it. This gives you an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. You see, this again is what we're looking at, to get these figures on here, because Cook Inlet region stock will be worth almost $1 million to every shareholder when they get, by the time 1991 comes down. Now, This is because of the 7I revenue sharing, because of the value of the land, and because of the value of their own subsurface. All of these things have to go in, as far as most people don't realize what the value of that 7I is, which is the revenue sharing or distribution. If any region has anything in their subsurface, they have to put 70% of it into a common fund that's shared by the rest of the region's stockholders. And that includes southeastern Alaska's timber. But now it doesn't include the village timber. And you see, there's a lot of ambiguities like that in the act on here. I heard at another meeting the other day, a village from southeastern Alaska came up, and they were saying, we sold our timber, we gave $20,000 to each of our shareholders. We set up a little trust fund, but that's gone. Now what's next? See, we're asking for more again on here. Now this is again, we're funny people. We could make no mistakes. If we got hungry, the BIA would feed us. They wouldn't tell you to go out and teach you how to get your food, but they'd feed you. If you got cold, they'd buy you some oil. They wouldn't tell you, show you how to go out and chop wood or do something else and get yourself warm. And we got so we're dependent upon the BIA, and we can't make any mistakes. And that's a hard thing. It's going to take at least one generation to breed that out of us. And I think, again, trusting even our own people is going to be real hard for us to do after the couple of us get shafted.
Thank you, Mr.
Johnson. Well, while Doric's got the microphone there, if anyone would be more comfortable to speak from your seat, we'll ask him to bring it around. Well, some of those folks at the back, some of the younger folks at the back, if any of you feel like saying a word, we'll ask Doric to bring the microphone back. I don't know whether it'll reach that far, but...
your findings are be able to going to get funneled into the company that's from Virginia that Norm Nault spoke about. That's they're trying to do the same thing in another way by calling up a person on a telephone and trying to get them to speak. And what do they think of the Alaska Native Claims Act? And how can a person right off the cuff get a telephone call from somebody and not even know who he is? And they ask him, what do you think of the Alaska Native Claims Act? Is it helping you? You know the kind of answers they're getting as far as this is concerned. And people hate to say anything because we look stupid enough as it is when we know what we're talking about. Besides making a statement when you don't know something, there's very few people are good extemporaneous speakers. And the kind of information they're going to get, all they have done is made the government and the bureaucracy look good so far, as far as their preliminary reports are concerned. And I would like to see some way for the information that you gather at least get to Congress so they have something to compare by, some way or another, because I think at that you'd be doing us more of a service if you could do that than anything you could do.
Well, I hope when my report is ready for you next year that if you approve of it, you can go to Congress with it and say, look, here's a guy who had no axe to grind. He came, he spent 2 years here, he went all over the state, listened to hundreds and hundreds of people. Here's what we told him, here are his recommendations, and we hope that you will proceed along those lines. Now, that's what I would like to do for you. That's what I think my job is. Mr. Johnson referred to the 1985 study. That's a completely different thing. Congress said in the law, in the ANCSA, that in January 1985 they wanted a report from the Secretary of Interior on the status of Alaska Natives. I think those are the words used. And the Secretary of Interior has hired a firm from Virginia or West Virginia called MCI to do a report, and they have pretty well completed that report, and it's available now. But it's really about, did the corporations make money or did they lose money? What is the school dropout rate among Alaska Natives? What about health care? What's the standard of health care? What about education and so on and so forth? And it's an interesting set of statistics and so on. I've looked at it, and it's kind of useful if you want that sort of background data. Now, the Secretary is going to take that, the Secretary of Interior, as I understand it, and on the basis of what it says, he will decide what he will report to Congress. He'll do that in January. That's what ANCSA says he's to do, and we'll all know then what he says. I will finish my work next summer, and it'll be based on what you've said at these meetings. I didn't know that other work was being done over the phone. Certainly cuts down on travel, though you might wind up with quite a big phone bill at the end. I don't know.
They don't pay any phone bill.
Okay, well, that helps, doesn't it? Well, I'm trying to catch the eye of some of the people here that... Why don't you just pass the mic along that row behind Mr. Johnson and just see if anybody there would like to...
Hi, I'm Elsie Starbuck, and I'm from the Nana region. And when I first moved on here to Kenai, I didn't know that there was a tribe that existed down here. It was kind of shocking. But now I'm working for the tribe, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I was not educated in the IRA and everything that goes with it. And I learned a lot by working here. And now that ANCSA is up next, I said I wasn't going to be involved with politics, but, you know, you can't avoid it. I feel afraid or scared. You know, I don't have land. I'm buying land. And I just feel afraid. You know, what's our next step? What are we going to do? You know, where are we going? But I just feel, you know, as long as I keep my identity, I'm fine.
My name is Wally Oten. I'm an inmate at the Wildwood Correctional Center. I'm an Eskimo from village of Koyuk. And I was given a fairly short notice about this, that two of us will be coming to this meeting. I managed to scramble together some thoughts. You have to bear with me because some of it's in shorthand. And it's in different pieces of paper. I wrote this piece for the native club that we're trying to put together at the correctional center. This article was to be put in our Wildwood newspaper, and the title of it is called Native Club Productivity. We native inmates possess some or many aspects of our culture. A majority of us prefer native food over American food and prefer to live in a village and prefer to socialize with another native. On the other hand, signs of the modern civilization are in our homes and on our front yards. Yes, we are very much dependent upon modern technology. However, for hundreds and hundreds of years, our diet has been rich in protein and fat. And it is this long-standing acquired taste of our foods and the religious ceremonies that make up some of the key elements of our heritage. None knows more about our traditional culture than the elder natives living today. The two things we of the younger generation need to do with more effort are to pay attention to the wisdom of our elders and to pursue the current professions. In her publisher's message in the Alaska Native News Magazine's November 1982 edition, Rosita Worrell metaphorically said that in order for the new wave natives to ride the crest of the tide, they must strive to obtain the knowledge of a space and technotronic age and also retain the values and wisdom of our elders. This is the same undertaking the Japanese nation strived for after World War II. Today, the Japanese technology is very competitive in the world economy. The Japanese worker has the opportunity of contributing to his national esteem by going to work in the morning and also has the privilege of going home at the end of the workday to his thriving traditional culture. Essentially, they are living in two worlds, working with modern technology and keeping intact the worthwhile things of their ancient culture and philosophies of life. The Chinese nation has recently decided to ride this new wave tide and is seeking America's modern technology. This is the same self-determination trend our relatively small Alaska Native population must strive for, to keep in rhythm with this changing world and to prevent the loss of those worthy things of our traditional culture. Our native way of living, including diet, social mannerism, and basic religious structure, is braided by our direct use and sharing of the land and sea. Because we don't want to let go of our way of life, and because we are greatly influenced by today's Western culture, we must provide a governing system as the means through which our people will strive towards self-determination. Creation of such a system requires a statewide native solidarity. For certain, this colossal job will need to be undertaken single-handedly by the state's sparsely spread natives and their respective corporations and organizations. We will need to implement an umbrella instrument such as the AFN to oversee and monitor this closely knitted operation to ensure that Alaska's native population will succeed in their struggle towards a self-determination goal. It will be the rightful duty of our native leaders and native corporations to work together under this umbrella in making proper decisions and policies. lost a page. Our elders and we of the younger generation must work together to create a modified domestic lifestyle so that our cultural legacies will continue to survive, and so that those who are able will pursue and acquire a college education. We, the indigenous people of Alaska, must use our education by taking control of our corporations and this AFN umbrella so that we can make our own programs and create an economic base for a job market in the villages. Forerunner to this plan is to have our own natives compile and establish a report recorded on tape in the native tongues on the social and economic status of Alaska Natives before and after ANSCA. inevitably necessary is a concerted Native political movement throughout the state. We Native inmates here at Wildwood have a more immediate struggle. We need to rehabilitate from our crimes by developing better social or domestic standards for ourselves. We don't have the time to pursue political issues concerning Natives. Many Native inmates live with a handicap, which is a noticeable communication gap with the English language. It's not that we Natives don't have the ability to understand the white man's ways and vice versa. What is lacking is a means by which this communication gap can be bridged. We Natives need to establish credibility as a group in Wildwood, and then as a group, we need to educate the staff and counselors as to why we Natives behave as we do and why we believe in what we believe. We need to become more assertive. The counselors then need to approach the communicatively handicapped Natives with a tailored method of rehabilitation. There will probably be at least three kinds of Natives who would not fit into this rehabilitation plan. The first would be a person who does not need much rehabilitation because of the nature of his crime. The second, a person who can benefit from this assistance but is either too bullheaded for rehabilitation or too immature to cooperate. The third would be a person who doesn't have a problem communicating sufficiently in English. Idealistically, much ground would be gained in a Native's rehabilitation if the state were to hire a qualified Native counselor who doesn't have this cultural communication gap between Natives. Though through a Native culture club, we Natives can build a bridge to cross that communication gap. This club would need to require two provisions for those willing to participate. The first provision is to have Native tutors who have the ability and time to teach Natives the reading, writing, and verbal skills of the English language. As a GED tutor at Eagle River Correctional Center, I have learned that Native students prefer to learn from Native tutors and will learn faster and more from a Native tutor than a Caucasian tutor. The second provision that would be required is to allow Natives to occasionally have informal discussion groups so that we will have the opportunity to help each other, and as a group, write down ways communication with the staff and counselors can be improved. I believe that all Natives don't mind listening to and learning from other Natives. On the other hand, this club would be formed to promote the pride and heritage in the Native inmates by providing cultural activities such as an annual potlatch and an occasional appearance by Native persons who hold the old traditional legends, stories, and cultural histories. Other activities this club can pursue are to contribute to the integrity of Wildwood through projects for the institution and projects for the various segments of the Kenai community. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Dr. Forbay, I believe, and he said, heredity is very important to you till you're born. Yeah. And from that instant,
I'm with you so far.
That instant on, the environment that you're born in takes over. Uh-huh. If I was born in China, I'd speak Chinese, so forth. If there's plenty of food, I grow more, so forth. So it is the environment that takes place that you grow up in that lends to you to be what you are. Our society today, the people fall within a bell-shaped curve, if you want to look at it that way. There's an idiot at this end and a genius at that end, and most of us are in this big bell-shaped curve. And the genius that's in the Australian bush, if you transplanted him to New York, he's still a genius. He'll learn all there is to know about New York in just a short period of time. And conversely, the idiot doesn't make any way where you put him. He's still an idiot. He's not going to learn anything. These are some things that on here. I say this because this man took people that were from the African bush, born out where the father and mother lived in a sod hut and hunted animals with a spear. And these children had eighth grade missionary type educations. And in within a short period of time, they were engineers and pilots and so forth on jet airplanes. And the captain on a jet was at home in a pub in London, but he was also at home with his parents in this sod hut out in the African belt. So one generation, he started his discussion out, but how long does it take to change a society from a urban or from a rural society to an urban society? And the urban society, he got answers from 2,500 years, and his answer was 25 years. Communication today is that while I'm speaking this message, it can go around the world three times. Everybody could hear it. Back 150, 200 years ago, a horse was the fastest method of getting things around. And now, while the horse is lifting his hoof, the person in the African bush could hear it if it's being transmitted on radio. And so knowledge is disseminated around much faster, and you hit unexpected things all over. But it's very difficult for us who are, I'm going to say, in a way, morphodites, because we have a native heritage, but we were raised in a society completely foreign to that. And how do you backtrack and change some of these things that we're talking about as far as this is concerned? We've gone to a white man's school, we've learned to do these things this way and that way, and sometimes even the native food ends up being abhorrent to some of us that have grown up in another society. But we're still natives as far as this is concerned. So taking all of these kind of people and assimilating them into one good group who can communicate with each other. Right now we have a communications problem in the natives in Alaska. The Yupiks can't talk to the Tlingits. If you want to talk in the language that we're speaking of on here, there's five or six different languages, and some of them deliberately won't speak English in a place where that is the only common language that they have. And the Tlingits delight in doing this at a meeting. They come up, and most all of them have even college educations, but they come up and they'll speak Tlingit. And I don't believe that this is a way for us to get along with each other and do some things that we're looking at. But that, I think, is a problem that hasn't been talked of here. Cook Inlet region, one time we were asked to preserve the heritage of the region. So I asked, I was president then, I said, whose heritage do you want to preserve? Cook Inlet region is composed of Aleuts, Tlingits, Athabascans, Eskimos, all of these people all mixed up in one pot. Now whose language or whose heritage are you going to preserve? The only thing we had in common was money. And that's pretty hard to preserve these days. But these are some things, again, that some problems of the act, that since they mixed things up the way they did, it's very difficult for the business corporation. And by law, the business corporation has to treat every shareholder exactly the same. You can't give one something and another one something else, unless there's the value. It can be done by all of the shareholders voting on it, and you can sign a waiver and do other things like this, but it's a real difficult problem. And I think that until we do get good communication between all of the various entities involved and then decide on a plan on where we're going to go, we're going to be fumbling around this way and probably end up with nothing.
Yeah, please, why don't you come over here?
We talk about corporation, tribe, and I think this is a problem for us. Maybe Andy, it's good that you brought it up. First, I need to ask, why do you have to change people? You know, why is it important to change people? One time I was at a Christian meeting, and some guy got up and said, and it was a pretty good question, and nobody answered, and he had to leave because everybody got mad at him, but he said, if I was a Nairobi tribesman, could I be a Christian? And I guess that was the problem. He couldn't be those two things, I mean, at the same time. But, you know, why do you have to make, why is it necessary to make urban people rural or whatever? Because you see, when you do that, you have to define it. Somebody's got to define it. How are you going to do that? When Elsie said, she's from Selawik, and she said, I'll be fine. I'm a little scared, but I'll be fine as long as I keep my identity. I feel exactly the same way. I agree with that. I will be me whether I'm poor or rich or cold or dead or whatever, you know. And I think that we talk about, we have to unite, and we have to decide what we want to do. But each of us has to decide, has to be able to do something for himself first before we can give to another. And that means that's true, very true in our native society. If we sit here and we wait for the corporations to make us rich, you know, everybody's got this big bubble that's got our corporations stamped on it. I mean, they're Nana or Siri or whatever. And the bubble's going to explode and some goodies are going to fall out. Well, maybe the bubble will explode and no goodies will fall out, or maybe the bubble will explode and the goodies are going to fall on somebody else over in Japan or something. You know, that's possible too. So if you, and it looks that way, but what I think my message is that, and I tried to say it before, is that each of us has to know who he is and what he wants. And don't let anybody snow you, because you can sort this out. And if we as individuals cannot take care of ourselves, we're not going to be able to give anything to anybody else. You can't fake dance steps if you don't know how to dance. You know, and our group is fine, but it is composed of individuals. A tribe is individuals. A corporation is individuals. And what you think and what you feel is okay. That's okay for you. And you can say it and you can do it. And I don't think that it's even proper to say, well, I'm going to change this person, you know, and I'm going to make him rural or urban, and I'm going to educate him, and I'm going to do this. I think it's the people at Nana who have this beautiful expression, it's two worlds with one spirit. And that's what ANCSA is going to do, I think, mostly for us. We're going to have a choice. You'll be able to take the best. You can say, well, I can live in the village because I want to, or I can go and work for a while in the city because I want to. You know? And Andy made a good point when he was talking about the BIA having trained people well. We're going to give you this and give you that. Well, it goes a little farther than that. In our Tenaina history books and the ethnography of the Tenaina, which is where the Kenai's people, those are our ancestors. And during the culture of the day, your status was derived from how much you gave to a person. If you were a guy and you could feed a family of 24 people for a whole winter, you were a pretty good guy. I mean, you're really high class. You're way up there. Everybody wanted to be your friend. And you could do no wrong. You could teepee creep with everybody's wife and everything. And they would love you madly for it because they knew you were going to give them all some fish and stuff because you had it all. Well, when after that changed in the late 1800s here, and it became the other way around, and the people didn't have, you know, the big guy in the village couldn't give anything anymore, when that status thing flipped around, then where are we? And a lot of people like to say, well, we learned that from the BIA. No, we didn't. We knew about it all along, and we know about it now, unfortunately. We're waiting for the BIA to quit, and we're saying that's okay because the corporation's going to feed us like hell they are.
Amen.
No, they work for you, and don't you forget it. And do for yourself. Find out what's happening and ask. And speak up. Speak up here, because I don't want to be the one who does all the talking. I think Andy did it more than me, though. This time. Thanks.
Could I just ask a question?
Yes.
Kiritsi Tribal Association. How many members do you have?
The Kiritsi Tribe.
Kiritsi Tribe,
it's not
sorry.
Anything. We have 513 now, I think.
And I'm sorry, these questions are pretty elementary, but do they live here in Kenai?
We have 127 who live in different places in the South 48. 50 live in Anchorage. One is in Sweden and one is in Jerusalem. No.
Why isn't he here tonight? And the rest are here?
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're not here, but
no,
probably playing bingo.
Okay. Thanks.
I think she brought something up, but I said these young people, if they had trained in Africa, could pass both worlds that they lived in without any problem. And I think that this is right, that we can all do that if we make up our mind.
Yeah. Well, this has been a good evening, and I don't want to adjourn until everyone's had a chance to speak. If there's anyone else who wishes to do so, someone at the back.
Outside of Virginia?
Sure.
My name is Waldo Coyle. I've been a resident here in Kenai since 1948. I've known a lot of these people personally. I've worked with a lot of them. I've fished with a lot of them. And my observations of this Native Claims Settlement Act is we should start with the Treaty of Sessions, which was never fully implemented because they listed two types of people. Native peoples. One were the civilized tribes, which were supposed to be given citizenship rights within the 3 years if they so desired them, and the other were the uncivilized tribes. Now, the only thing that I could found in reading and things of that nature, they showed two pictures. One picture of a native with a bowler hat or a top hat and a high stiff collar and a white man's suit, and they were listed civilized tribes. And they showed the others in furs, moccasins, they said uncivilized tribes. And that seems to be about the extent that Washington has known about the native people all over Alaska for a good many years. Now, when they left the Treaty of Sessions, my understanding when I was studying about the Indian tribes and when I went to school a good many years ago was that they put them on reservations to prepare them for eventual assimilation into our society if they wanted to go that route. Okay, they set off a boundary, a piece of land. They said, this is a reservation. You'll have this piece of land, you'll have this piece of land, and they divided it up. They gave them no further instructions. And they griped like the devil because on the Blackfoot Reservation, they set them aside there in Idaho and in Montana, and they promptly took their teepees and set them up in the backyard. They knew how to work a teepee. They didn't know what the hell a house was. So the federal government has failed every place they've turned in trying to make native people into our kind of citizens. It won't work. When they're ready to become our kind of citizens, they become it. But they have to have a period. Now, on these, they have to have a period of instruction or aid or something. Instead, they put them on the reservations, and they made virtual wards of the government. Well, they were wards of the government. They couldn't sell their land without approval of the Indian agent, and if necessary, the Secretary of the Interior. But at least the idea was that they were supposed to set these people up so that they could eventually form their own type of society, or at least fit somewhat like a square peg in a round hole, or vice versa. However, with the Native Claims Settlement Act, it looks to me like they started backwards, because the majority of the native peoples, as one gentleman implied back here, that they were not proficient. Well, that's true. They were not proficient in the English language or our American type of language. Their grasp of our language was very small. And to tell those people that they're supposed to go and form all these corporations and all these types of governments and all these types of business and go into business looks to me like taking some kid that's never graduated from grammar school and telling him to set up a four-year college and teach his people the subjects that are necessary. Well, he might make a stab at it, but it's going to be a long ways before he gets the job done. And I think that this whole thing should have been worked over, and there should have been some checks and balances put in, like our government demands, and they should have put some overseer over some of these things, because most of these tribes were at the mercy of hired managers, usually white people, with more education than they knew what to do with, and those people made the decisions. And those decisions were not necessarily right. If you can look at the history, I think there's two or three or four of the regional corporations that have gone broke and had to get bailed out. And this is not teaching these people to be self-sufficient. Had they started on a smaller scale to help the skin sores market their product and work together on it. But instead of that, it's been a divide and conquer scheme. Now, the native people have a great potential. They have got as much ability as any other group of people on earth. But they are very poor at expressing themselves in our language and sometimes in their own language. But if they will learn to cooperate among themselves, they have a great potential in a state, because in a group, well, if you go back to Aesop's fable, taking a stick one at a time or put them in a bundle and tie them with a string, you can't break them. As long as you stand up to where they can divide you and pick you off one at a time, you're vulnerable. If you band together and think together and don't let some smart guy try to lead you down the primrose path, you can do something. But they're making the same mistakes here that they made in other states. But this cooperation is an absolute must. You've got to learn to get together. If you can't speak, then get somebody that can speak for you, somebody that can negotiate for you, and negotiate with your fellow Indians. And they also have got to learn to cooperate with the white man, because the white man's here to stay. You can't run him out. And the Indians here to stay. You can't run them out. So if they can get into politics, there are a few that have been in politics. The president of the Senate, when we came up here, was an Indian, Metlakatla. But you've got to learn the ways of politics. You've got to learn every bit of it. And you've got to learn how to use your vote and how to play it. But you can't use it and say, well, I'll only vote for an Indian. Then you're defeating your own purpose, because if an Indian can't do the job for you, you're going to have to get somebody else to do the job for you, whether it's a white man, whether it's a black man, whether it's a yellow man or a green one. You've got to work together, and you've got to learn to play this political game together. The handwriting's on the wall, and it's been there for quite some time. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. things that
yeah.
I should before they get away from us here.
Okay, excellent.
And some deal with tribalism and things that are falling between the cracks that we haven't addressed, and it's the trust relationship that the Bureau of Indian Affairs has as a mandate and how it deals with the corporate structure until 1991 and the lack of carrying out that mandate to Indian people in general, both individually and collectively, such as water, sewer, and the mandates through the Indian Health Service, and the mandates in education in the BIA. And I can see that it's the intent of the BIA to continue running that, but they haven't addressed it in Alaska near the fashion that they have in the lower 48 that they're mandated to. And it seems to be glossed over by the congressionals and purposely ignored because it's going to cost some money. And examples of that are clinics at the village level and approaching services that everybody else takes for granted to Indian people at the village level, just ignoring them. And as Indian people become educated in public utilities that all other citizens of the U.S. enjoy, and that's a bonding capacity and all those utilitarian kind of things, reaching a level of self-sufficiency is very difficult, if not impossible. And it's like every time that you see a project in Indian country, there's a sign that says, this was brought to you by the EDA or HUD to create jobs in your community. However, you very seldom see anybody from Washington, D.C. beating the drum if there's a sewer plant going in for a metropolitan area. It's just taken for granted that those things happen. So it's been used as somewhat of a whipping boy and a salve for consciousness, I think, on look at what good guys we are to Indians when we give you water, sewer, and septic that everybody else takes for granted. And that's part of the trust responsibility that's being ignored. You have other examples where that occurs and the federal government steps in and does it. And that's on federal reservations such as Air Force bases, military bases, and that sort of thing. The state doesn't come in and pick up the tab, and the boroughs, counties, and cities don't either. And so it's taken for granted that Uncle Sam has to foot that bill. That's the mandate that the agencies have from Congress to do that. That's not being done. Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you all for coming and thank those who spoke tonight. I think it's been a useful meeting, certainly very, very helpful to me, and I hope you found it to be helpful too. You can't expect that all the answers will be forthcoming in one evening, but put together this evening and many others like it all around the state, the views of literally hundreds of Alaska Natives who've come to these meetings and spoken, and give me an opportunity to organize what has been said and to make proposals that I hope will be practical and that will give you some idea where how you can get to where you want to go. And That means that I'll be traveling throughout the state for the rest of the year, and then I'll write my report, and it will come to you in the summer of 1985. I should say that even though I've been asked to do this by two international Native peoples organizations, they both agreed that I was to be completely independent. In other words, they won't tell me what to write. I will use my own best judgment in dealing with all of these questions. And as I was saying earlier, I hope that you will then be able to take my report to Congress and to the state. And that is, if you find that it's a report that you can use, that you can adopt as your own. If I can do that, I'll be very pleased and to have been of some help. And I think this meeting tonight has been especially useful. We've had an opportunity to hear what your views are on these questions, and I do appreciate it. My thanks again to the Kanaitse tribe for helping us to organize the meeting and allowing us to use the building here. And you will be hearing from me. If you wish to write to our commission, the address is on that background paper that I think was distributed earlier tonight. If you have anything further to say that you didn't get a chance to say tonight, please write to me at that address in Anchorage, and I really would like to hear from you. We'll be carrying on with our work for the rest of the year, and if you happen to subscribe to the Tundra Times, you'll be able to read about it, because their editor, Bill Hess, usually comes with us when we're out traveling in Alaska. So all I can say is I think it's a good idea to start meetings at 6 o'clock, because then they end a little earlier than they usually would, and that's kind of nice. So thanks again, and we'll be seeing you.
Thanks, Lynn, for coming, guys. Thank you for inviting us, Claire.
Good. Thank you.
Amen.